Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome back with your host, Lily S. Caldwell, on Cool Your Heels, sponsored by Passionate World Talk Radio Network, Educate, Enlighten, and Entertain. And today our special guest is a CPPC, CLC, LPCC certified coach. Her name is Lisa Sawicki. She is a San Diego-based life relationship self-dating coach. She has a communications Bachelor of Science degree from Boston U, and she works every day alongside her clients to combine honest self-awareness, self-talk, and self-action to break through emotional blocks, issues, difficult relationships, and desired goal results, what I call the chains of Marley, or what parents used to call baggage. So good morning, Lisa. How are you today?
I'm great, Lillian. Thank you so much for inviting me to your podcast.
Well, you're very welcome, and I'll tell you why. The pandemic left everybody unprepared to face real reality, meaning the life changes, challenges, complications, and to coin Shakespeare, know thyself. And a lot of people don't know themselves. They don't know who they are. Well, yeah, mom and dad brought me up to be a nice person, and I'm bringing up my son or daughter to be a nice person, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to make it. Go ahead.
No, you're so right. I mean, and I think that realization, sometimes, you know, you can be so busy, you know, you get through high school and you know, some of you go to college and you're always on the next accomplishment, you know, so it's really hard, or even in your first job, it's really kind of easy to slip in the doing and not always the feeling and the being. And I notice what happens probably at around 40-ish, people start to question, what did I manifest? Did I really want this? What am I doing? They're asking bigger questions, you know, in their 40s and 50s, when they've gotten off the goal, you know, so goals of have the baby, get married, have the baby, have the job, get the money. And then they begin to say, well, what am I really feeling? What do I really want? Am I really satisfied, you know, with this life that I've created?
It's very difficult because people feel half full and half empty. And they're not given
absolutely
a how-to book either.
No, nobody was ever given a how-to book of managing emotions and really being in your authentic life. There were, you know, ever since we're kids, you know, we're on to the next goal and the next goal. And society and parents, you know, really reinforce those kinds of accomplishments and wins. But the thing that's kind of missing, that doesn't really knock on your door until you get more still and you realize maybe, these friends are not doing it for me. Why is it I don't feel great with them? Or maybe this partner. Not all the time. I mean, some people pick, you know, the right partner and go by their feelings and it all works out for them. But for a lot of people who aren't really sitting with their feelings and their own desires and their own reality about who they are, what they're a yes to, what they're a no to, are then looking at these things they've manifested or they've dedicated to or married on some level, they've taken on. It could even be a career. You know, there are many doctors and lawyers that want to quit what they've done after all those years of training. So, Lillian, I really believe that at any age, you have to, you know, be still enough to free enough to ask yourself the questions, what do I really want? Who is my real tribe? What do I want to do during the day? What am I more of an expert at, and what am I not good at? What can I delegate, you know, so that you can create a life that you want and that you're emotionally satisfied by being in relationships that really, really satisfy you. You know, maybe girlfriends that really hear you and are on your team and want the best for you. And you know, or relationships that are really true partners. We can't pick our parents. We can't pick our family or our siblings. So we just have to manage, you know, those relationships the best we can where those people are at. But certainly we pick our jobs. We pick our friends. We pick where we want to live. We pick what we want to do in our 16 waking hours a day. That's kind of a lot, Lillian, what I teach, how to daily self-coach yourself.
I think that's very important. I remember after I had lost my husband, I went into counseling because I had been married for more than 30 years, and all of a sudden I was single again. And my child mm-hmm. was no longer a child. He was a grown-up. He had children of his own. And one of the things I realized was that I had so become one or a couple with my husband that when he passed, all of a sudden I was looking at a blank wall and saying, who am I? What do I want? What am I going to do? Mm-hmm. How am I going to do that? Yes. And there isn't any universal answer out there, folks, because nobody else has the courage to look within themselves and say, now, what am I going to do?
Absolutely. And there's, you know, and that's so true. You know, like what do I live for without the agenda? The agenda has been removed. The love, you know, that love relationship is no, you know, no longer available. So really, who am I? What do I want to do? And asking those deep questions. And of course, there's lots of feedback out there, right? You know, from people. So
right. A lot,
everybody's got an opinion about what they think you should do, what they think you should be doing, how you should be doing it, you know, and all of that. So let's just say right now that it's very difficult to not be subject to the noise of other people's opinions. I mean, I think other people's opinions can be amazing and be safe. You know, really profound. There's a lot of people's opinions that are unsolicited that lay on you, and they're not at all healthy or emotionally healthy. A lot of them are fear-based from their own self, from the person saying it, their own projection, fear-based, shame-based, pressure-based, status-based, ego-based. And it takes a lot to decipher from what feels safe and real, authentic for oneself.
Not only that, you're no longer the person you were. You grow, or hopefully you're growing emotionally. And mm-hmm. you're no mm-hmm. longer at 21 or 32. You may be older than that. So you have to look at yourself in a different light. And that's very difficult for a lot of people.
It really, really is. You know, as we grow older, you know, everything changes from your 20s, 30s, and 40s. And you start getting in, you know, as we know, there's so many different stages. And as we're growing, we have to adapt to those different feelings, internal feelings that we have, that we feel. Like, you know, some people no longer want to go to the bars and go drink with their friends. They don't want to do that anymore. Maybe they want to change friends, or maybe they want to incorporate something different. But not only do you have to manage your internal compass, but you have to manage the external, because at all different stages, outside people are having different reactions to you. You know, I often hear women, I do coach a lot of women, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, even 70s. And they talk about how as they got older, they begin to feel invisible to the outside world.
Yes.
where they used to get a lot of attention and for their looks and their youth and their beauty. And now they, you know, they're still beautiful.
Now
but they
don't.
You know, now they don't. They feel invisible, and I hear that a lot. And it just, and, you know, there's a lot of single people out there, male and female, that are starting to date again, have, you know, want to have a new relationship in their 50s and their 60s, and they're very scared. And for, and I understand that. It can be, that dating scene can be very, very tough out there, and it just takes a lot of self-esteem and thick skin to not, you know, get depressed over other people's reactions to you or rejection of you. It's Lillian, you know, it's just really, really hard to, you know, stay authentic and to find people that you feel authentic with, you can be yourself with, who you feel safe with and who you really trust. That takes time. There are so many great trustworthy people out there. But you may have to go through 10 people to find one person who's safe and trustworthy.
You may have, it's very scary out there. And you have to disassociate from the people who are out there who are out to scam you, which has gotten to be $1 billion business in the States, what they call romantic scam.
Oh, my God, the scammers have gotten so expert and masterful. I mean, you know, when somebody calls you up and you don't recognize the number and they say to you, is this Lisa? Is this Lisa? And you say, they've got you on a list. They know you. If you say yes, if I say yes, this is Lisa, now they've got me on a recorded call saying yes. Right? So, yeah, it's like that. And I just want to bring back that point around this thing that I do, which I teach people how to daily self-coach. So, Lillian, based on an 8-hour sleep schedule, which is, you know, optimum, I mean, that's the best you can do is 8 hours. You know, you can do 9 if you want. But, you know, if you can get a good 8 hours, a good sleep, you're doing good for your health and your mental health. You got 16 waking hours. Yeah, so you've got 16 waking hours a day. So we don't think of our 16 waking hours a day as living. Oh, we're living. But if you can really put on that invisible coach hat to yourself and say your 16 waking hours that you are actually coaching yourself to do the podcast, I'm coaching myself to be on time, to know what, you know, what the codes are, coaching myself to go take a walk, coaching myself what I'm going to eat this morning or what I'm going to wear, what I'm going to do. Everything that we are doing in action is we are actually telling ourselves to do, or we're telling ourselves not to do whatever, not to do anything maybe, stay in bed all day, watch television. But if people could see the ownership of them coaching themselves, whether they're coaching themselves productively or non-productively or destructively or healthily, if people could see that they were their own life coach, just that little tweak in their consciousness, that they are coaching themselves, they might have better results if they did that. And it takes really from the moment you wake up to, of course, it all starts with positive thoughts. You certainly don't want to wake up with negative thoughts or negative fear or, you know, well, you know, with fear, any of that stuff. That's why I don't really always recommend people to go right, pick up their phone and go right to the news, because that's hard. That is a hard thing to swallow in the morning. The earthquakes, the deaths, the politics, the whole thing. So if people just see that they're coaching themselves, okay, what do I want to do today? Or they don't have to take every call that comes in. They don't have to say yes to every invite. Just because somebody asks them to do something or calls them doesn't mean they have to do it. Like, they can choose, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it deals with people give permission to other people, but they find it extraordinarily difficult to give themselves permission to do things. And because of that, that's why self-coaching is a very difficult, challenging task for them.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I think people, you know, sometimes people just want the structure. They don't really have to think of what they're doing. A lot of people resist even feeling. You know how many clients I have, Lillian, that something, let's say something happens to them. Let's say somebody was rude to them or even abusive on some level. Do you know how many people don't even realize that somebody was just rude or outed them or was abusive to them? Like, it takes them a while to even process that. They don't even know. They're not conditioned to actually see what just happened.
I think it's they think they're protecting themselves, but they're only prolonging their agony. It's very difficult to confront yourself about anything, let alone confronting other people and recognizing them for what they are. It's difficult
so
for other people.
It's very true, especially of one's upbringing, you know, when somebody, you know,
yes.
If they're get message from parents or grandparents or whoever took care of them was, you know, just do it. You don't have to question it. I do it because it needs to get done. Or, you know, just keep moving on. Don't care. You know, don't process what just happened. Let's just keep moving forward. When you grow up in an environment like that all the time, you don't have the luxury of really actually having a response and clarifying and defining your internal response to what happened. You know, we see this so often. You know, there's this uprise, right, in older divorces. I'm sure you're aware of that, you know, so that you're seeing, you know, people that have been married 20, 30 years, you know, getting divorced. What is that about? Well, a lot of what that's about is that somebody in the relationship kind of accepted the psychic deal that was, or the arrangement, you know, the kind of the nonverbal rules that were made, and it didn't really fit them. And then they get to a certain age and they no longer can do it. Like, they can't do one more day. What happens is that resentment flu comes in to the relationship. They themselves have not confronted it. They've allowed behavior to happen, or they've allowed situations to happen over and over, decades and decades. And then they pop,
yes.
And they just want to leave. They can't do it anymore. So this concept of really managing your daily emotions and locating, like, really defining them, defining what is real, what is the reality, what just happened, what's the reality with this other person coming at me, what do I really feel, is just so huge, you know. I feel so bad. In our society, just puts wedding and wedding dresses and wedding parties and the engaged, put it all such on a pedestal. My generation,
yep.
Not so much. I mean, it was there in my generation. I'm a baby boomer, but you know,
I'm a baby boomer.
You know,
it was barefoot and
yes.
Pregnant. That's how you were brought up.
Come on,
and you were the property of the man. Come on, I'm a 1951. I'm standing. I'll be 73 tomorrow officially, and my granddaughters are being raised, and the way I was raised, generations separate us. Generations, not one generation, but generations, folks, because the attitudes have changed, and yet some of them still remain the same.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. You were born in 61, okay, and, upcoming happy birthday to you. I was born in 56. Those 5 years difference. I grew up where we were, I graduated college in 78. My peers couldn't wait to work. We were not thinking, myself and my friends, we were not thinking about being married. We were thinking about working and being career girls. And so
my mother was so unhappy that I never made it to prom and that I was not pinned by the time I was a freshman in college. You would think the world had been overtaken by a new flood apocalypse. It was a disgrace to the family that I was still single. So 5 years to make a difference.
They really made a difference. Now, my mom also had that pressure about, I remember my 30th birthday telling me how she was already married, way before she was 30. And, I didn't, not get those messages. I did. But I still really, I knew I was always somebody who trusted my instincts and my gut. I didn't even meet my husband until 37 and got married at 42 for the first, for the first and only time, hopefully, in my life. And I tell you, I'm glad that I didn't have that outside pressure because the men that I was with before, my other boyfriends, and I had a couple of 3-year relationships, I knew they weren't partners. I knew they weren't right for me. I knew it because I went through experiences to know so that when I met my husband at 37, I knew this was the person I would spend the rest of my life with. But I would not have known that had I maybe had other comparisons, other relationships to compare it to. And I just think that I get really, really angry, Lynn, about the pressure of our young people, especially our young women, about looks, about body, about marriage, about kids. You and I know not everybody should have kids. Don't have kids for the wrong reason. It's too large of a decision. It hurts too many people. If you have a kid and you're not, and you're really not cut out or wanting that lifestyle, because you and I know, Lillian, child raising doesn't end at 18. In fact, it's
no.
18.
You've got them for the rest of your life, whether you like it or not.
That's it. The rest of your life, whether you like it or not, and whether you're good at it or not, it is a terminal decision.
Yeah.
It's wonderful for people who want to be parents, but you should really think about that. It should not be automatic just because you got married kind of thing. So this is why, Lillian, I'm an advocate of trying to teach people how to daily self-coach and how to really feel their feelings. Like you get off the phone with somebody, maybe. Could be a relative, could be a friend. You get off the phone and all of a sudden you don't feel so great. Don't know why you don't feel so great, but you just don't feel so great or happy. If you're really in tune to yourself, you can think about that phone conversation. You can think about what was said that maybe triggered you or maybe felt like a put down or a left-handed compliment. You have to be aware of what's coming at you and what your feelings are. And now all of our feelings are not right. We could to a feeling that's not based on reality. Okay? So it's not that your feelings are your wisdom or, the truth. Your feelings are not always the truth, but your feelings will at least guide you to try to seek the truth or reality.
Yeah.
And that's just so important. Lily, that's my work's purpose, and I feel like it's yours too with your podcast and all the different subjects that you have out there and that you delve into. So many of the subjects are things that people don't talk about. And really, it's just we have to manage our emotions. We have to hear and feel what we're a yes to and what we're a no to. Who makes us feel good? Who doesn't make us feel good? I mean, come on. We know one of the gauges for that, a measurement, is when you're with somebody for 5 minutes and it's like 5 hours, or you're with somebody for 5 hours and it feels like 5 minutes. I mean, you got to look at that.
But you see, the problem is we've been taught, not so much our generation, but the following generations, that as long as you don't get caught, it's okay. And you can apply that little ruling to either telling the truth, telling a fib, committing a crime, stealing, hurting somebody. And it's the idea that excuses you for doing what you're doing, your behavior. And that's what really makes me very, very angry. It's like when they started teaching the kids at sports, as long as you win, it doesn't matter what you do on the field to be the winner. Because being a loser is terrible. You shouldn't lose. And one of my biggest things is I tell teachers, you really need to teach the students how to fail, to have a really bad fair day. Because everybody has them. And if you do not know how to work it through to its what I would call its logical conclusion, then you're really setting up a generation of anger.
So true. That is so. Anger, and really, kind of emotional paralyzation. Because then what happens is they can't. Not only are they angry, but they don't trust anything. There's no trust because there's no system.
They don't trust, and they don't believe anything, either. I mean, it was bad enough when they were teenagers and says, oh, you don't have to tell me, I know. Well, you don't know a damn thing. And two, it really gets played out in a real-life situation. When you're at home, you're protected. You're shielded by us, your parents. It's different when you go out into the real world with no shields.
Very difficult to be like. And also, it's interesting that you say about, you know, do your behavior and the goal is not to be caught, but don't feel your behavior. Don't feel the ripple effect of doing this behavior, how it's going to feel to you and the impact it may have on other people. Like this kind of razor-focused goal and not at all about the process and who it's affecting and how it's affecting you. And this depression after that. I get to that point so much, and then you realize, wait a minute, I don't like who I was. I don't like how I handled that relationship. That wasn't nice. Yeah, I may have won. I have gotten the job or gotten the girl or gotten the guy or gotten the this or that, but who did I hurt in the process of that? And then having to really live with. And that's a big one, you know, living with regret, that's a big one for people. How do they let go? How do they incorporate the regret that they may have felt because they weren't conscious when they were doing the behavior so much? The responsibility of that.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is that you cannot teach morality or morals. Civilization. It comes along with society and their behavior. So the morals is an outreach from what you've been taught, good versus bad. And our present culture now, good and bad have become almost intertwinable. One kind of flows right into the other one because there's always degrees of the good and bad. And I think because of this leads a lot to the problems of people self-coaching themselves because they really can't see the boundary lines now clearly.
It's true. It's absolutely true. So would you say, I mean, I'm in agreement. This is my thought. If the most important skill to learn, even as children, is to try to self-regulate and be your own coach. Now, children maybe don't know that language, but to really understand what they feel, and when something happens, to think of why. Let's give some different. Okay, you didn't get invited to the birthday party. Okay, let's give some reasons why you may not have gotten invited to the birthday party. A, maybe they just had a limit of people, and you know what I mean? They couldn't invite everybody. Maybe B could be you're not their closest friend. That's true. Maybe C could be else. I mean, always, that's such a great skill to teach kids on something just happened. Let's name all the possibilities of maybe why that happened. Instead of just one and just hanging your heart on one possibility of why something happened. You know, I know it's, you know, I really wish I could go into schools actually and teach this to kids, because this is the foundation. This is the foundation of having a beautiful life. And I know that many children are in upsetting adult, you know, maybe their family life is not easy. Maybe it's harsh. Maybe it's destructive. And so young people, you know, we can't choose our family or our family environment or the conditions. You know, we can't. So we have to kind of just understand them, understand and handle it the best we can until we leave the house at 18. You know, so kids are really, really have a big job, Lillian, right? Because they are in homes, and the home could be very loving and supportive. That's great if you're that lucky. But if you're not that lucky, you have to really mitigate that and still feel the optimism and the freedom of a desired life once you leave that home. And that takes a lot. I mean, that's a lot of maybe sometimes displaced guilt, is not to agree with your parents or your parents' way, to want something different. Or it takes a lot to feel like if maybe a sibling or a parent was bullying to you. That's a really hard pill to swallow. Why would somebody who loves me want to hurt me, be mean to me? That's a lot. And yet those kinds of things are so shame-based that the child doesn't often talk about that to anybody, kind of thing. That's why I think some of the things we're talking about today, understanding your feelings, clarifying them, having compassion, are just so essential for young people.
I agree. And I think that a large majority is, a child is not going to say, well, maybe dad had a bad day, or his boss told him some things that he couldn't assemble or simulate, so he's taking it out on me. Most kids aren't that acute about recognizing that their parents really are flesh and blood. They're sort of mythical gods as far as they're concerned. Depending whether you're a boy or a girl, boys have a tendency to put the mothers on the pedestal. Girls seem to choose the father most times. Doesn't have to be, but it is that way. But there's so many things now being thrown at our kids under the age of 16. That's by 16, you're more or less formed or believe they are. And they're still evolving. And it never occurs to them that other people have other lives and that everybody responds in a different way. And what may hurt them may not hurt somebody else. Or if they get angry, they may take it out by turning around and being a bully on somebody else. They don't question it. They only see things in black and white. So for them to really learn how to self-coach themselves would probably be a good way of them being introduced to the realities of growing up, because each generation is different from how they grew up from the previous generation.
Absolutely. You know, you just said it, you know, so clearly. That is so true. So we see that, you know, basically our foundation, you know, we know this, our foundation begins, you know, when we're a baby and through childhood. That's how we build our foundation, those developmental years. And yet, we really don't know, you know, the emotional health of every person's reality, you know. So it's very tricky business, and it takes a lot. Then what happens is so many young people can't really process all of this, understand it. What happens is when they get out, and sometimes it can begin in their 20s, or it can begin in 30s or 40s, when they're saying, I don't feel good. I'm not happy. I'm so insecure, or I'm so scared. And that's when they start asking those questions. Because when you're young, you're just kind of surviving and getting through. And, you know, you're trying to hopefully have a fun childhood and have joy. But you don't really understand the messages and the development and your patterns, your internal patterns, your internal responses, really until you kind of face the world. And then you feel, and you don't. And oftentimes we don't question when we feel good. We just feel good and want more of that, more of saying, feel good, fun, yay, love, great feelings. People don't really question great feelings, but when they start to question, it's when something doesn't feel good, something feels scary, or not good, or rejecting, or not safe, and that's when the work starts, usually. With a person.
Oh, absolutely. They have to be aware that they're hurting so much that just putting a Band-Aid on it is not going to make it heal and go away. They have to get to the point where it unfortunately incapacitates them from acting, reacting, and controlling. And when that happens, that's when they need to come to someone like you.
Right, and that's what happens. They don't feel good. They don't feel safe. They don't know what they want. They don't know what's meaningful to them. They don't know what their purpose is, and that's when they come to me.
So could you please stand up? Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. What did you just say?
I was going to ask you when you're finished, then to give a summary of what you just said so people will get it all in a nutshell, because we have to, the 45 minutes is up.
Oh, sure. Lillian, I'm an advocate for people to be their own life coach. I'm an advocate and a teacher and a trainer for people to understand what their feelings are, to locate their feelings, and define them, and let's start working with them. Let's see if this is an is this feeling something that is based on reality, or is it not based on reality? Let's do the work. Let's understand how we feel and what our responses are. And that's really what I teach when people come to me, and I try to gently, very gently, to try to, let's say, okay, your life has happened thus far. Let's kind of now look at it, and let's understand it. And now, here is where you're at, and what makes sense for you now today? How do you move forward in your day-to-day? How do you make decisions? I teach people how to make decisions. I teach people how to really feel what they feel, and to see if they're being overly sensitive or overly blind or overly accepting or overly delusional. So it's really know thyself, Lillian. Know thyself. People do want to, you know, work with me. That's great. Lisa Sawicki, my phone number is 248-399-3311. 248-399-3311, And my website is www.selfcoachnow.us, www.selfcoachnow.us. And I do give a 20-minute complimentary introduction. If somebody wants to give me a call and process to see if they want to work with me, I will give them, you know, complimentary 20 minutes on the phone to hear them and to say how I could help them. And it's my life's work. I mean, I'm here, Lillian, to make people feel better, to have them have more vibrant lives, more authentic lives, and to not suffer. So that's what I'm here for. And I want to thank you so much for allowing me to have this conversation with you today. I've learned many things from you, and I think we're pretty simpatico on
I think
our,
so.
Our
we need to keep in touch. And I would like to bring you back because I know that dating for seniors is one of the most frightening experiences for those who've been married for long stretches of time. And the traditional places where you previously went to meet guys or gals are no longer safe, quote unquote, places anymore. And I think that there's a lot of women and men who feel unhappy and lonely. And the dating apps most women don't like over the age of 70 do not want to get involved with the new technology. It scares them. They just about manage the cell phone, a tablet, and a laptop is pretty much out of their technological depth. So I would love to bring you back and talk about that because there are now statistics show more divorces among people 50 and older than there are 50 and younger. And I think it's a pretty important subject, especially if you're a baby boomer like us who were brought up in one era and now you're in a new era of dating, which is vastly different from the 50s and the 60s.
Absolutely. I'd love to come back and talk about it. That could be, that's a whole other thing, you know, conversation, and I could give some really good tips, motivation, and some inspiration, but some my real grounded ideas about trying to tackle, you know, going out and meeting people. And it's really about going, when you go outside the door, you know, really making sure you do something that's worthwhile to you, not just to meet somebody. So whatever that activity is, if you meet a nice person, yay. But if you don't, at least you did something that you enjoy. So yes, let's continue this conversation. I think it would be
Terrific. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us today. You've just heard Lisa Sawicki. That's Sawicki. And she works mostly physical locations, San Diego, California, and Michigan. I know Michigan needs a lot of help. Cold up there, too. Anyway, you can listen to this interview all over again with Lisa at youtube.com/Passionate World Radio, on facebook.com/Passionate World Radio, on our website, PassionateWorldTalkRadio.com/blog. Thank you very much for joining us today. And this program is being run through PassionateWorldTalkRadio.com. Please check us out. Thank you very much once again, and have a terrific day.